You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, brought to you by Ministry Grid. Ministry Grid is an online church leadership and volunteer training platform offering a library of thousands of videos and a suite of powerful admin tools to provide practical training for every area of ministry in your church. Find out more and get a free 30-day trial at ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins, my co-host.
What?
And today we are going to be talking about starting well, and our third host is Jenny Catron, who's been on the podcast before. Welcome again, Jenny.
Thanks so much. Fun to be here.
All right, so we're talking about starting well, so moving into a new position or a new organization. So we'll just jump in with our first question, and that is, foundationally, what is so important about getting off to a strong start as a new employee or as a new leader? So moving into a new position. So Jenny, we'll throw this one your way first.
Cool. Yeah. Well, and this is relatively fresh in that about 2 years ago, I went on staff at Menlo Park and I had been at Crosspoint for 9 years previous to that. So it was, you know, quite a shift to go cross country move and jump into a new leadership seat. And so I really reached out to a lot of mentors to say, what does it look like to start well in a new environment where you don't know anyone? Unlike my move to Crosspoint, when I started at Crosspoint, I was already an attender, so I knew everyone. But when I went to Menlo, it was like, I don't know anybody else except
for— You're the new
person
and you're in charge.
Yeah, I'm the new girl and, you know.
Don't know the people or the culture.
Totally, totally. So lots to learn. But I think, you know, that old adage, you only get one chance to make a first impression. And I think just recognizing the significance of those first impressions, those first moments. And that's like, it's kind of a catch-22 because you want to make this good impression. So sometimes you can almost be something you're not or put on.
Yeah, you kind of put on a face.
Yeah. Yep. And so I think that's one of the things when you're starting well is to figure out, what does it look like for me to be authentically who I am? But really, you know, and I think a lot of that is, you know, showing a deep desire to get to know people, understand the culture, listen well, but also bring who you are to the conversation.
Well, and you have a tendency to bring up what you did at your last role and talk about it way too much.
Yes.
Because you're trying to prove, hey,
yeah,
if we your had boss a, if was we right
drinking,
in hiring
if
me.
We had a drinking game for every time you talked about being an executive pastor, we would all be dead of alcohol poisoning.
I know, but I feel like sometimes you have to qualify so you can.
Well, and it's hard because it's like that's.
I'm just proving your point for you.
No, I know. And again, Barnabas, as you well know, most of the stuff I talk about is stuff I have problems with.
I'm being honest, true. Right? Yeah. Well, it's true, though. And I remember this, you know, of different staff members that I've hired through the years, and they would come on and all they would do is talk about their previous experience. And like that was not necessarily a starting well.
No.
Right.
We hired them for the experience they brought, but you want to know that they want to be there.
Yes.
So I think part of starting well is just really helping the people you're with, the team you're with, hear your heart for wanting to be a part of the team and learn the culture and learn the people.
And you want to start with momentum. And if you're constantly looking backwards, that's inertia. You're anchored to something instead of leaning forward and looking ahead. And I mean, so it's just, I mean, in sports, in if you're running a race or whatever, a strong start sets you up for continued momentum. I mean, that is just the way it works. And so that's why it's important conceptually.
Well, and you're going to be, your peers and your boss are going to look at you from your first 6 months.
Yeah, to be honest, because even if they like you or are inclined to like you, they're all skeptical too, or at least they all have questions, even if they're very gracious questions. And so you're proving yourself in those first days by your work ethic, by how you interact with them, by how humble you are in asking questions, by how little you say, well, we should be doing it this way because that's how we did it at my old job or whatever.
Well, you know, the adage, you never get a second chance to make a first impression, I think dovetails really well with hire slow and fire fast.
Right.
I don't know who said that, but
I know
it's a comment.
It has been attributed to everybody. If you went and looked it up on Twitter, it's probably like Franklin Roosevelt and Teddy Roosevelt and Ben Franklin and John Maxwell and whoever.
I mean, I know. It's like Jim going Collins to a conference and somebody says, comparison is the thief of joy. And you're like, how many people have said that statement in the last 2 years? Because we go to a lot of conferences and I see it attributed to people at almost everyone.
That's hilarious.
It is. Yeah. It's one of those things.
Yeah. It becomes the language of the culture. You're like, I don't even know who originally said that, but.
And that sounds, you know, hire slow and fire fast sounds really harsh. But I think there's a lot of wisdom in it, or at least understanding that if you get somebody in and they're not a good fit, you need to go ahead for them and for you going ahead and making a change there. And, you know, that's not what this podcast is about. And maybe that's a good topic for future, but,
it's on but the yeah, list. You owe it Nobody to them. Nobody wants to talk about firing though.
So I know, we put it on. Bad.
Yeah, no, that's a great, I mean, and I do think in church culture, particularly, I think in cultures in general, but I think in the church, because we're such a family, because it's so mm-hmm. integrated, it is very hard to make, the culture fits are really, really hard. I was talking with a friend about this last night that works at another church. And it's like, you just, the culture fit in churches that are growing fast or hiring or have a lot of turnover, the how much culture can make or break. So I think it'd be a great podcast down the road.
Well, are you signing up for that one?
Sure.
All right.
I'll talk good about it.
Mark her down. You're going to be a regular anyway. We've already decided that.
I love it.
So we touched on some just conceptual things of why it's important and mentioned making a good first impression and momentum and things like that. But what are some practical ways? So this is our second question. What are some practical ways that somebody can make a good first impression when starting? So get off to that strong start. Sure. Some practical ways to do that.
Yeah. Well, we kind of touched on this a little bit when we, you know, when we talked about just knowing, that impression you're making. So the being self-aware piece, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's just increasingly so important for leaders in general is, you know, just self-awareness and understanding how people perceive you and how you, like, do you understand your tendencies in moments like that? So I think back to some of my firsts at a new job and, you know, you're trying so hard to make a great first impression. And again, you're putting on, you may not be being authentically right. who you are. And so knowing what are the triggers that make me want to either, you know, give my resume every 5 minutes. I had one person sometimes say at one point, say, Jenny, quit giving us your resume. We know what you're capable of. Yeah, we hired you for this. Like, but you know, when you're insecure, when you're feeling like you don't belong yet, which is all normal mm-hmm. reaction to being in a new role. You know, it's like, it is normal to feel, even in a leadership seat, it's normal to feel like, worry about, do they like me? Are they right. accepting me? Do I belong? Do I fit? Is this going to work? Like, all of those questions are incredibly normal. But
And you don't know how to read anybody either, because you haven't worked with them long enough to understand that the person who gives you a blank stare and walks out of your office, that's them absorbing information, not them thinking you're a moron because you've never worked with them before.
Yeah, exactly.
Various different instances like that. No, I mean, I remember my first few months, I mean, at multiple jobs, but just at the current one at life, but going home and just trying to figure out, do I fit in the team dynamic?
Yeah.
I like them.
Yeah.
They're not giving me any bad vibes, but do I fit? Is it working? Am I doing? And then the evaluation of just the job itself.
Yeah.
And I think, to me, I think that's equally as important as just, do you attack the job you have with vigor so that as you're figuring out all the personal stuff and as confusing as that can be, you're just getting your job done. You're making strides. You're bringing suggestions to the table so that they're looking at you going, you filled a void in a way that nobody else has to date.
Part of the thing I would say in starting off really well is don't make somebody else do your job.
Right.
You're new and you've definitely got to come in with a learning posture, but don't make somebody else do your job. On the flip side, also don't be afraid to ask for help.
Right.
But mm-hmm. don't make somebody do your job.
That's a great distinction.
It really, really helps when you have a supervisor who is comfortable with you making mistakes.
Yes.
Not dumb mistakes, but running with it to the point where you're just kind of like, now I have lots of questions because I'm not sure exactly what I need to do next. Yeah. So you're learning, but you're trying. And so instead of having to be perfect right off the bat, you can put a lot of effort in, learn a lot, and also maybe not be perfect.
I would also say in a new job or in any situation, period, that leaders listen.
Yes.
I'm not good at this part. I'm going to go ahead and tell you that. I have learned because I'm not good at this. But leaders listen. And that is go in with that learning posture and go in as an interviewer and just ask really good questions. If you can try to ask about three times as many questions as you are at, you know, talking. And really be thinking about, as someone's talking, don't think about what you're going to say, but think about what the next question you're going to ask.
That's good.
You will impress them beyond measure just because you ask them questions, and they got to talk about themselves, or they got to talk about their organization, or what their passion is.
Totally.
But they'll be like, man, that guy's really sharp.
I think the listening piece is really important. I like the distinction you made too, Todd, of the, so listening well, but also like do your job, you know? So I think sometimes we can, you know, get told, oh, listen, just absorb, learn the culture. But if the, and you'll often hear that from your boss, mm-hmm. you know, like that's been my experience, is that that leader who's brought you in is saying, just learn, just listen. They're trying to take the pressure off of
you. But they're still going to come and say, are you getting your job done?
Well, and your peers are asking that, you know, so the peers are like, what's this person made of? What do they got? What are they bringing to the table? You know, because there's always a little posturing and, you know, we're trying to figure each other out. And so, and I like your point too, about asking questions and really leaning into the wisdom of the team around you and not feeling like you've got to figure it all out. Because I think, again, we're trying to prove ourselves. We want to show that we can do this. We're competent, we're capable, but leaning into the wisdom of the team around you, valuing their experience, and then also taking initiative is really important.
Two really practical things I'll say before we move into the next question is this. Dress the part. And by that, I mean, like, dress for success. Don't just come in.
It's one of my favorite cliches.
I know, but it's true. Like, if you're gonna err to one side, overdress. At least to start.
Because of the first impression thing.
Because of the first impression
That's
thing.
Good.
Yeah, don't show up looking like a slob.
Yeah.
I get
don't
that.
Do that. And then the second would be show up on time, early, if at all possible. Like, Lifeway has a really early culture. So I remember first coming here, I was like, I mean, in D.C., you would work to 6 or 7, but...
Yeah.
But you'd start work at 9 or 10 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so...
It's because nobody can get to work before that because the traffic's the worst ever.
I know, but here it's like... You get here between 7 and 7:30 and you're like, the parking lot is pretty full. Like, what's going on? Like, so it's figuring out that cultural piece and making sure that you don't want to be that guy. I mean, I still, secret confession, I still, when I pull into the parking lot every morning, I notice whether or not Eric's Jeep is in the parking lot. And when I leave, I notice whether or not his Jeep is still in the parking lot.
Yep.
And you know, in my head, I'm like, yeah, when he came in, he saw my car.
He didn't pay any attention.
He didn't. He didn't.
But
in your head,
point.
That's
you
what
told yourself that.
Yeah.
So
I told myself
good.
That.
But thing, you know, leaders set the pace, right?
Absolutely.
So Eric setting the pace by his presence is, you know, that you know he's here. He's, you know, and so you're watching that. So the people that you work with and you lead are watching that too.
We almost all get to the office, our team, before Todd, and we almost all leave before Todd every day. So I get in and I just know Todd's not going to be here because I get in early. But I also know that when I leave, he'll still be in
meetings. He'll still be around,
I don't have to deal with that.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to question number three. And I'm sure we'll continue to talk practical stuff throughout, but what are some common mistakes people make when starting a new role or position? So we talked about things to do. So what are some mistakes that people make? So some things not to do. I think I'll start with a personal confession. One mistake is being too assertive. I have a tendency to come in and I absorb. Yeah, I know. Shocker,
I like
right?
people like you.
I absorb information pretty quickly, but I probably am way too confident in my interpretation of it. And so I'll immediately say, well, we should do this, or let's try this, or we should change this, as opposed to asking questions about how does this fit in context? How has this worked historically? I don't know what I don't know. And so I just fire things off. And that doesn't always make a real good first impression. So being too assertive is problematic. On the other hand, not being assertive enough is problematic because you're not offering much.
Yeah. I was going to say something similar in that don't assume you fully understand the culture.
Mm-hmm.
So same kind of thing. It's like we can come in and make some pretty snap judgments on things because of coming from whatever context we came from. And in a different culture, that could have radically different implications, you know? So I think being sensitive of culture, and I think are like those decisions you make or those assumptions you have, those kind of quick instincts are really good, but learning to test them rather than just direct them right off the bat.
I just had to look up, who wrote First 90 Days, but if you haven't, if you haven't read First 90 Days, it would be a great thing for you to pick up before you start your new job. Because Michael Watkins is the author of it, but it gives really good frameworks to walk through. So in thinking about going into a new role, you know, you do want to have a learning posture. You want to be a learner, but how can you quickly assess different aspects of the business? So he talks about, if you can put it into a framework, then you know how to respond more quickly. So is it, one of four categories? Hopefully I will remember these: startup, turnaround, sustaining success. Do you know the other one?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and I
should know it.
We can look it up.
We'll have to. In right now.
But three out of four is really, really good for impressive. Not having the book.
Realignment.
There you go.
And so when you're looking at all that, you have to say, okay, what kind of an organization am I walking into? Okay. You know, obviously you went from being at a church plant where you attended and then went on staff and then became the number two to a, how old is Menlo?
142
years old.
There's a little probably, different than a church plant.
A little different.
Probably. And you know, it's Cross Point non-denom?
Non-denom, yeah.
Okay, and so that's...
Went to denomination.
Very denom.
Yep.
And so it would be...
From Nashville to California, another Nashville, significant shift.
Yeah.
Fairly. Yeah. I'm sure having a framework is really helpful.
It was actually really helpful. And I would say in that too, and then in understanding, a shared understanding of which one of those four, because I had... perceptions of which of the four the organization was in, but then there were some varying opinions on that among the existing staff too. So that actually provided great conversation because I was observing and had kind of an assessment of where I thought the organization was. And then in talking with some of the leaders, you know, they had kind of a different, you know, they would have different. So it actually provided great conversation that if we had not had that, I probably would have went off the rails right at the beginning.
Yeah. It would be interesting to go in with a blank sigmoid curve, a blank S curve, and ask people, okay, where do you think we are? Where do you think we are? Because I bet you get
some and
on the rise of it, some on the plateau, and some on the fall.
Well, and you can even see, so we were talking about this earlier, but you know, again, 142 years of history. Menlo's a large church, lots of staff. So you could ask any different department, they'd have a different perspective because a different ministry area or department might be at a different place.
And you'd run into the same thing at Lifeway. So our team, when I was hired, Todd made it pretty clear that we function like a startup.
Uh-huh.
Because we are starting something that hasn't existed here before. But Lifeway is 125-ish years old. And so there are pieces of what we do that are rooted in a lot of history, and with all the culture massive. and the red tape and the things that have worked and the things that haven't worked. And so even just moving within the company, you shift cultures when you go into a meeting with one department versus another department.
Totally.
So if somebody from our publishing, our Sunday school curriculum publishing wing, sat in on one of our team meetings, they wouldn't probably know what to do with themselves because it looks really, really different when a bunch of assertive people are trying to get stuff done in a startup way versus their way of doing things. I think one other mistake that comes to mind, and this is something I've done poorly in the past, and I think I did better when moving to Lifeway, was people make the mistake of not finding out enough information before they start.
That's good.
So, and that goes through the job interview process as well, but you should go through a job interview process as if that will be your job. So that's part of your preparation to start. So if you go through the job interview and they say, we want you to start tomorrow, you should be well prepared through that process to step in and start.
Absolutely.
So you need to know what the job entails. You need to know who you're going to be working with. You need to know the culture of the organization, as well as you can at least have things filed away that you can go, oh, that's what they were talking about.
Right.
The other piece I would say, and I'm sure there would be some disagreement, hopefully neither one of you will disagree with me, but I would say don't start a job and then take a 2-week vacation. Like, just be sure if you're going to take a 2-week vacation, just say, hey, just schedule that in between jobs.
Right.
And even if, you know, some people say, well, you could totally negotiate that in. Yes, you could totally negotiate that in. However, you're losing a very valuable window of information gathering, using a very valuable window where you're the new guy,
right?
And you get new guy privileges.
New guy privileges, and as well as the first few months on a job are like your infancy, and the way that infants and toddlers grow, it's massive rapid change and a ton of information absorbed. If you stalled out on that, they just wouldn't grow. So that you're essentially retarding your own development in your job by taking a break. You're the baby.
I don't know how to respond to you right now. I really don't. I'm struggling.
Good. I left you speechless, which is a really good chance to move on to question 4 because Todd doesn't have anything to say right now. All right. What are the significant differences between starting at different levels or in different kinds of organizations? And that's a vague question. So here are a couple examples. So if you're moving to a higher level, being promoted mm-hmm. to executive or from just employee to a mid-level, or starting at a ministry versus a business. So think of some of these differences, and are there dramatically different things to do or to be aware of between levels or between mm-hmm. kinds of organization?
Yeah. I'll just speak a little bit from my experience, kind of in both situations. So I went from business to ministry about 11 years ago. And in business, like the coaching that I would get would be, Jenny, you need to be a little bit more assertive. You need to be stronger. You need to, like, if you want to be an executive, like, you know, be tougher, you know, mm-hmm. was basically the message. And then I moved into ministry and I came in with who I am, which is pretty directive, pretty, like, I have quick opinions, you know, and I knew the culture of Crosspoint. So, you know, I could slide into the culture pretty seamlessly, but then I came in with a very, how I worked in the marketplace mm-hmm. and I slide over and all of a sudden everybody's a little like freaked out because I'm being a little too aggressive, a little too strong. So it was like, I got these radically different messages in the marketplace. Yeah. I was coached to continue to be stronger, more aggressive, more assertive. Like, and then I moved into ministry and all of a sudden it was, whoa, you're a little too much. And
ease up.
Yeah, slow down. So it was the relational piece though, you know, I think that's one of the things to be aware of in that transition from like a marketplace to a ministry mm-hmm. setting or the other way around is that, you know, in marketplace, it was just what I got done, what I produced. And then relationships were kind of secondary to that. Ministry relationships usually are first. And then, you know, what we're doing comes second. And so that was the big.
I'm not sure that that's always, I mean, this is more of a parenthesis. I'm not sure that's always good for the organization. I think a lot of Christian organizations, churches especially, because they're at the most relational end of the spectrum, but even Christian businesses suffer from that because there are things that need to be changed, just productivity or qualitatively.
Yep.
And the you hurt my feelings gets in the way.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just want to go, you know, your feelings don't matter quite as much as doing good work.
Yeah.
So do better work.
Yeah.
Which is why I say I can be a bit too assertive.
That's kind of an example of what we talked about earlier, isn't it?
Yes, it is an example. You can earn the right to say that, but you shouldn't say that right when you start.
No. Well, I mean, yeah. In some ways, it depends on what you're being brought in to do.
That's true.
True.
Because you may be the guy that's supposed to come in and do that. A lot of times, that'll be a consulting role instead of a long-term role because you're going to do some damage and make some head roll.
Being a consultant has its advantages because you can come in and tell the leadership all of the nasty things without worrying about anybody's feelings. And then you leave and they have to implement that if they so choose.
Figure out how to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are times when someone is brought in specifically to change culture. And when that happens, that's when you're going to need a little more of that.
There's some really good examples of this in Primal Leadership. I'm reading it right now, so I'm only maybe a third of the way through, but they talk about the different kinds of leadership based on emotional intelligence and the like.
Yep.
And the type that I just exemplified, they say that's really only useful if there's a really...
Never.
Basically, if there's a completely failing culture and you have to right the ship immediately, then you can go in and yell at people. Well, other than that, it's almost never useful. Yeah.
Exactly. So you go back to the resource that we mentioned before. So Primal Leadership would be great. Also mentioned First 90 Days. Mm-hmm. That when you identify, you can quickly identify, hey, I'm in a startup situation.
Right.
Here's a framework for me to work through that's going to be really helpful.
Yeah.
So I would say definitely pick that up.
I think another one of the differences between levels is if you're just hired as an employee, you're really only worried about yourself. How am I doing my job? And then how am I meshing with my coworkers?
Yep.
Whereas if you're hired into a leadership position at any level, you have to worry about doing your job, but also you have to worry about how you're connecting with everybody under you. And what's the structure? What's the framework? What's the relational capacity and how they're doing their job? Because your job is to lead them in their work.
Yeah, you're curating a team of people as well. And a team that you didn't build, that somebody else built.
Yep. Yeah, and that's different in marketplace and ministry too, because a lot of times when you make a transition in a leadership seat in ministry, you're going to absorb the team that's there. Oftentimes in a marketplace setting,
you're going to be able to
rebuild your team. And so there's a lot of energy that you need to be prepared to put into learning that new team. So like back in a ministry context, if you're coming in at a leadership level, I like your point, Barnabas, about if you're an employee, well, you've got peers and you're going to build relationships and you kind of worry about just your role and your responsibilities. But when you come in particularly at an executive level or higher leadership level in ministry, all of a sudden you're the boss coming into a brand new team. And so there's lots to learn relationally about the people, the culture, et cetera.
All right. You're
going to get our fifth question?
I'm going to get our fifth question. Our fifth question is, how long does someone have as the new person and how should they take advantage of that status?
That's right. It's a privileged status to be the new person.
You
get away with stuff.
Well, and
I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that you can ask questions, for example, that other people would get that somebody who's been there for 3 years has no business asking.
Yes. Totally. Like, what are our values? What was our third value again?
Yeah.
If you ask that 3 years in, wow.
Right. Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah, but you do get that space to ask the questions that might actually stir the culture a little bit in a good way, but because you're the new guy,
you can poke and prod without being overly assertive, going back to that thing and just say, well, why do we do it this way? And if it's a genuinely curious question, people might go, I don't know. It's just, and so you're starting to sort of poke at things that maybe need to be changed without saying this is dumb. We shouldn't do it this way.
The answer to how long really depends on the organization, because there's some organizations that...
And who gets hired after you.
That's true.
Because as soon as you hire somebody else on a small team, you're not the new person.
That's true. Yeah.
But if it's a really old organization that has a lot of tenure, then there's going to be people that, you know, you're 2 years there and they've been there for 20. Town.
Yes.
And they're like, whippersnapper.
Yeah. And recognizing different people will perceive you that way. So like in Menlo's culture, there's a lot of staff that have been there a long time. And then there's another chunk of staff that are all relatively new. And so depending on who you're with, their perception of whether you're still the new guy or not varies, you know, so it's even kind of understanding that dynamic. And I think, overall, culturally, people are staying in jobs
way less,
mm-hmm. way shorter.
In ministry or in the marketplace.
Totally. And so I think that actually shortens the timeline for being the new person.
Used to be
definitely.
A year,
I'm giving it six
less
months.
Than half that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I think that book, First 90 Days, is a great, like, it's like, that's your really tight window. But then beyond that, I think culture really impacts how long can you play the new guy card.
I think in terms of a self-awareness thing, a person in a new position, their aim should be to take full advantage of it for as short a time as possible.
True.
To transition to, I'm not new, I'm just good at what I do. Like I'm no longer the new person. I've earned the right to be in this position. And if you can do that in 3 months or less, that's great. Where people just look at you and go, they have earned a seat at the table. Their opinions are valid. They've invested everything. Because again, especially if average tenure at a job is, I don't know, 2-3 years.
Yeah.
Then if you're giving up a year as the new person, you're wasting a lot of those months.
One of the things I would say too, whether you're in the marketplace or you're in ministry, especially if you're in ministry, some churches don't even do annual performance reviews, which still blows my mind. But it would be to ask your boss for a 90-day review. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So you've been there for a week or two, go to lunch and say, hey, I want to talk about the objectives that I have for my first 90 days. I want to see if that's realistic. I want to interact with you on this and let's set some objectives and expectations so that I have clarity in what that's a good win is going to look like with my boss
And that's especially crucial because a lot of jobs have a job description that's sort of canned. And the reality of the job is maybe 50% overlap and then 50%, oh, that's not on there. And so having those 90-day objectives are where you clarify that stuff.
Oh, didn't you know you're supposed to be doing that?
That's right. Yeah. Oh, no, that was for, we just sort of grabbed that from another department and used it, that kind of thing.
Yeah. As instructed by
I think that's advisor. A great point, too, of, you know, take the initiative to seek feedback and clarity on expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, because again, I think, you know, the people that have been around, they just have expectations of the job, whether that has really been articulated to you or not. And so I think it as the new person doing just that, like setting some objectives as you see them for the first 90 days and getting feedback from your boss or your team on.
And in terms of taking advantage of the new person status, you being able to speak into those objectives is something that sets a tone right off the bat. Because if you don't do that, it's whatever these sort of tacit expectations
are.
It's
completely subjective, and you have no idea what a win looks like.
You're at the whim of subjectivity, and you never spoke up to say, well, let's do it this way. That's on you.
You do it that way, you crush the expectations that you've been given for that first 90 days. You kill it. And then if you want to put your stamp on something, if that's in your personality, if that's in your DNA, probably all three of us.
Right.
Overly
assertive. If you want to put your stamp on something, you crush those and then you get outside the sandbox and mess around.
Yeah. It's good.
All right. Well, let's land this plane. We think that you should go on iTunes and leave us a rating and review because we've earned it. So that's my pitch this time. So if you wouldn't mind doing that, it actually helps. It helps our rankings in iTunes, which helps other leaders find the podcast. So there's a good reason to do it beyond just me begging and groveling. So if you do that, we'd appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening and tune in next time. Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. To learn more about how you can train leaders in your church, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks and watch a short demo video. For participating, you will get a free 30-day trial for your entire church. Again, that's ministrygrid.com/howitworks.